I have different headphones on. It feels weird. So,
do I sound better?
No.
Hello. How are you?
Stop. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. It's Eric with my friend Will. Hello, Will.
How you doing today?
Will's been trying to make me laugh while I do the introduction.
I was doing a pretty good job. You cracked up there three times, so.
A really good job. We can't play what he did because this is a family-friendly podcast.
There would be a lot of beeping.
But welcome, everyone. Thanks for coming. I am in a remote location. I'm in my kitchen, which is a very long story. And I have these headphones on that, they're noise-canceling headphones. That's why it feels weird. These are the headphones I use on the airplane. And so there's no background noise. So it's my ears are ringing loud. So what if I turn this off? Let me try. Does that sound any better? That sounds better. There we go.
You sound great.
It's just weird when you have the... Anyway, it's just Eric.
Do you want to start over?
No, I want to welcome everyone. I am the voice of positivity in a world that is a little topsy-turvy, you know?
Completely understood.
But I tried to get everyone to meditate the other day. I tried to get Rick to meditate at the opening of the show, and I'm going to work on that. We're going to do another meditation try in the show here. And I'm sorry if you think Eric's a broken record talking about meditation, but... I think it's something everyone should at least try. So
my only comment is, since a lot of people listen to the podcast in the car and they're usually driving, probably step one should not be close your eyes and take a deep breath.
Well, if there's a unkind person bothering you on the highway, just first let them go away. And then while you're driving and paying attention to the road, just breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth and do that five times. And you'll find by the fifth breath, you're breathing out deeper and longer, and a lot of that bad energy will be gone.
That's a good idea. I like that.
Yeah. It helps if you drive a minivan because no one really cares about you in your car. So
I don't even know what to talk. I just, in the sense of driving in the city right now, at least in Minneapolis, we have a lot of black ice everywhere. So there's a lot of little slips and slides and accidents all over the place. So Traffic is backed up everywhere almost every day for some reason. And there's a lot of angry people. So I hope more people take the breaths and take it easy. Because there's many of times I've got the kids in the car and someone's yelling profanities out their window towards me.
Oops. Well, I wanted to follow up with your whole experience at the Super Bowl because you were sharing a lot of fun photos and texts and stuff. And it was kind of vicariously very interesting, you being a pyrotechnician at the Super Bowl. So what were some of the highlights there?
I would have to say it wasn't just a one day thing. That was the one thing that was kind of crazy for me is the Friday before the Super Bowl, not like the Friday, but a week before Friday is when everything really started. And they have an opening event with the press. And then there's different events every evening and different mini concerts and stuff like that. For a city that's hosting it, it was actually really interesting to see what the dynamic of the, I don't want to say the 9 days of the Super Bowl, but really it's a 9 day thing. And the Super Bowl itself, the game, is actually the last piece of it. So there's all these things along the way and all these different events and different spaces and buildings and experiences. And if you're into football, if you're not into football, they had something for everybody. And it was an awesome experience to be part of that and to see how that machine runs. That was the biggest pieces. Not only could I experience the things, but I also got to see the behind the scenes of all of it, which is to see one of the largest productions in the world and how it works behind the scenes was completely amazing.
Yeah. I used to work on a lot of productions like that, where we're just the man behind the curtain part was pretty wow. I got hired a lot because I knew how to drive a truck and I wasn't afraid to drive in New York City. So I would just, when I first started living in New York, I was a gopher, you know, I was a production assistant and I'd drive anywhere, you know, and they're like, well, Eric will do it, you know? So I got to see a lot of very interesting places.
Well, not only that, but you also get to see different ways people work in the industry. I mean, there was thousands and thousands. I think they had, I said, 11,000 volunteers the day of just working on that one event, either doing security stuff or just even someone as simple as standing on the corner directing you going, nope, go down a block and take a right. And, you know, all these people are kind of new to the city or experiencing an event like this. And to have that many people helping out throughout the whole thing, it was just something to see. And then the other item was everyone there who was on the production side of it is kind of the best of the best, you know, the people who are really good at their jobs, the best laser guy. Like I got to talk to the guy who did the laser light thing for Justin Timberlake, I think it was, who came out in the beginning and stuff like that. If you ever take a look at the video online, that just to hear how they did that and to learn, I mean, it was only maybe a 45-second or 30-second shot on the television. Yeah. But the number of people that went into doing that 30 seconds was just mind blowing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, did you actually get to watch the game or were you working?
We did get to watch the game. We had different phases. A lot of the stuff that we were involved with, it actually led up to the day of the Super Bowl. So different events and concerts and things like that. For the game itself, they kind of break it up into multiple different organizations all do their different parts. Our piece was mostly towards the end of the game and the trophy ceremony piece. And then a little bit at the beginning of the game. In the middle of the game, there wasn't really anything. And then the halftime show was its own encapsulated piece that we were, you know, got to actually, it was interesting to watch the whole thing go together, but I got to watch the game and it was actually a pretty decent game.
Yeah. I wasn't going to watch it. And then I, at the end, I was like, well, I'll just turn it on and see what's going on. And, it was a good ending to a good game. Let's just put it that way.
I will say, and I think I posted this in the Garden Fork discussion group, but one of the things that I got to experience was the two sides of the halftime show, which is sounds kind of odd to say it that way. But I set up the phone, actually John, who worked with me, set up his phone to take time-lapse photos of the halftime show as from the moment they said, okay, it's the end of the second quarter and they pick up the ball to the point of when they put the ball back down again and start the game again. What happens in that, you know, 20 to 25 minute period? So we set up a time lapse and literally watching all these set pieces all come out and get set up and then how they moved all the equipment around and how everything came apart and then came off the field 25 minutes later and what it looked like for all the fans and the great experience they had here. And then I went home and I went online and, you know, Pepsi or whoever it was had the video of the halftime show. And I got to experience on what people saw on the TV. And it was interesting to see both sides of it is what it looked like in person and how it all made it happen. And then what you actually see the end result that comes out the other end at the, on the television was amazing to see how it all worked and to see how the whole thing was in a big picture.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know how to add to that because it's quite a thing to be there and you're running around moving this here and moving that there. And
they were so organized. There was a lot of practice. I think we started doing stuff with the halftime stuff. I mean, they started weeks before, but actually in the stadium, I believe it was like on Thursday, they started doing trial runs and practices and things like that. And they had it dialed in. And, you know, this company, this is what they do. They produce the halftime show for the Super Bowl. So it's, of course, their best people out there doing it. But watching these giant rigs and lights and equipment, stuff that, you know, I get the benefit of seeing concerts get set up and deal with, you know, tours that come through where it's Luke Bryant or it's Motley Crue or it's whoever, you know, comes, you know, through and does a tour. It takes an entire day to set all that stuff up, you know, hang all the lights and hang all the rigs and move all the stuff out and set up the stage. And then the concert happens and they take it down. For the Super Bowl, literally there is nothing on the field. There's nothing prepped. There's this hallway and then this back area underneath the stadium and into the parking garage. All of this stuff on wheels and all of it has a number and a code and a thing. And you know that A1 connects to A2 and then you go back and get your next piece or whatever it is. And they literally move an entire stage, set, lights, equipment, plug it all in, get it all set and good to go. I think it took them maybe 6 minutes.
Yeah, not bad. Well, it was cool. Oh, is your end of it all that confetti that's blasted up into the air?
They did shoot a lot of confetti out there. That was an interesting thing too, because they had two boxes of confetti. They had the red and the blue and the green and the white, depending on which team won. So It was interesting to hear the production staff. Okay, these are the boxes. Green team, go. Your red team, no. And you know, that kind of stuff. We were involved with some of that stuff, but that's again, another company that does that part of it. But there was a lot of it there.
professional confetti projectiles.
Somebody told me there was like 2 billion pieces of confetti or something like that. It just some ridiculous number. And they bring it in like in a big flatbed truck and they load it into the machines and get it all ready and boom, off it goes.
Boom.
People were selling it on eBay, by the way. That was kind of the strangest thing. Like I'm walking around and there's piles and piles of it there. I get home later on and my wife says to me, oh, did you bring anything home? I said, yeah, I brought a little bag of confetti home to kind of remember the Super Bowl or whatever. And she says, oh, did you look online? And I looked online and people were selling little bags of confetti for like $30. I'm like, I could have got a whole, you know, back of a truck full of that stuff for free.
Next time.
Next time. Note to self. Find out the confetti ahead of time and sell it online.
Well, cool. Hey, I want a little quick shout out to the Garden Fork Patreon supporters. I know I've talked about this before, but I'm going to talk about it every show now. I hope if I can remember. Boy, these headphones sound really weird. Maybe I could use my Patreon funds to buy new headphones. If you want to consider supporting Garden Fork on a monthly basis, there's information about that in the show notes to our video here. I mean, our podcast here. Or go to patreon.com/gardenfork. Just a quick shout out. I post some behind the scenes stuffs there. And Patreon is coming out with an app much like Snapchat to where I will just kind of like, hey, I want to share this with my Patreon patrons. Just hit the button on my phone and shoot a little thing with the dogs or me working on something in my garage and go, just want to share that. And boom, it's done. And it goes to the Garden Fork patrons. So asking for $1 a month or $3 a month or more if you can. It's basically a price of a cup of coffee a month and you can help Garden Fork be Garden Fork, you know?
So every time you go to Harbor Freight, you can turn on the little app and we can see you shopping around Harbor Freight?
Yeah, buying more clamps or something.
What's Eric buying today?
Yeah. And I got a Troy Bilt snowblower showed up in my garage the other day.
You sent over a text and a picture of that, and that's a good looking machine right there.
Yeah, it's always interesting when the trucking company comes up my road because it's a full size semi truck, and I always tell them, you really can't turn around, you know.
Yeah, you have to back up a quarter mile or a mile to get out of there.
No, you kind of go into these woods with real narrow curvy. They're paved roads, but they're narrow and curvy. But the guy, I mean, Troy Bell has sent me a number of pieces of equipment and it's always the same guy and he doesn't blink. He's like, I know where I'm going. And he takes off again. But thankfully, the truck has a lift gate on it. Cause it's like a 300 pound box and it's up at like chin level, you know?
So have you fired it up yet?
Yeah, we ran it in my neighbor's driveway and, in our yard. We've had just mediocre snow. It's been like 2-inch snow or 3-inch snow and rain. But I thought, well, let's just put it through its paces. And there's a video in progress. And Troy Bilt is a sponsor of Garden Fork, full disclosure there. So we'll see. It's so far so good. It's really fun to throw snow about 20 feet.
Is that a 3-stage or 2-stage?
It's a 2-stage. We could geek out about snowblowers for a minute if you like.
Yeah, I like snowblowers. I've got the big one. I've got the smaller ones and all that. So, I mean, let's talk snowblowers.
Well, there's single stage, 2-stage, and 3-stage snow throwers. And the single stage looks like a big auger, like a corkscrew. And it pushes it into the middle and forces it out this ejection tube, the chute, I guess it is. And that's good for 1 to 3 inches, I think. And then there's a 2-stage, which is what I have, which has the auger. And then it has what looks like a tennis ball thrower in the center behind the big scoop. And that grabs the snow like a handful at a time and throws it up the chute. And then there's a 3-stage, which is even more sophisticated than that. So I don't know. Does your Kubota have a 3-stage or 2-stage or?
It's actually a 2-stage. So just the two pieces, they grind it up and then it brings it to the fan piece. A 3-stage really is like an auger that takes it from the middle and corkscrews it back and then kind of serves it to the fan that throws it up. By the way, speaking of throwing tennis balls with it, back when we had a dog, I actually had that happen. We were snow blowing the driveway and there was a tennis ball in the snow and it caught in that fan and whoosh, it went out of that sucker and it probably went 50 feet. It was pretty impressive. So don't try this at home, but it is pretty cool when it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, we hit some sticks and stuff, but pretty resilient, and heated handles, which I'd never had before.
How have the Troy Bilts been with the shear pin? So for folks who don't know, there's a little pin that's inside there that if, let's say, a rock or it gets jammed up or whatever, instead of damaging the gears or the motor or the shafts, these pins basically get sacrificed and they kind of break. Have you ever had any problems with Troy Bilt with any shear pins at all?
No, but they do give you two spares. And
nice.
You can order them online. My neighbor actually has a 10 pack of them. I don't know if they're universal, but the ones he has fits my blower. But right in the top of the little control panel where the gear shift is and everything, there's two little slots and there are two brand new shear pins that just sit there. So if you hit a rock, the idea is that the shear pin is made out of a metal that is a little weaker than the gears and the drive shaft, and they will fail before the gearbox or the drive shaft fails. And so that's why it's called a shear pin, because it'll just shear right off. And then you figure out what was wrong, and then you put the new pins in and you're good to go. So
see, I've gone through 8 shear pins so far this year, and that's a lot for a single season for us. And I attested to the previous year they came and they did what's called dressing the road, where they go along and they put new gravel along the edges of a blacktop road, which is great because it helps with drainage and stuff. But when they plow, it picks up those rocks and it dumps them in the driveway, how you get that ridge at the end of your driveway. Blow the driveway, perfectly fine, get down to the end there and it has rocks or something inside of that last, you know, foot or two of the driveway. Right. And the Kubota has 4 pins in it, 2 on the long shaft each, and then actually, no, it has 5 pins. It has 1 in the middle and then the 2 on the long shaft, and it'll shear them off every time. And I just went to the store and I bought a whole box of them, basically kind of like your neighbor did. And I've been just burning through them one after another. And I'm trying to figure out, I never had problems with my other snowblower, and I'm just trying to think if it's something with the brand or the torque or the fact that we're running hydraulics to get it to go that's causing it to keep shearing these things off.
Yeah, I don't know. I might just be the sheer mass of snow and debris you're moving, because that's a big blower you're running.
Yeah, 54 inches. It definitely will throw the snow and it does a great job, but it's a beast.
Hey, I've been reluctant. I'm not reluctant. I haven't done this in a while, but we actually have a new customer review on the iTunes store for our podcast. So I wanted to read this for you. And awesome. The fella's name is Sweeper Force. I'm curious about that. His headline is like YouTube on the go. I watched all of Eric's YouTube videos on my days off. I'm a do-it-yourselfer, so his videos are right up my alley. I seem to not get enough garden fork videos. Oh, I'm sorry. I seem to not get enough garden fork videos, so these podcasts are great. I listen on my way to work. Keep up the great work, Eric. And that is from Sweeper Force. Sorry, mangled that. So. Oh, are you there, Will?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh.
I don't know what happened there. All of a sudden, you kind of dropped out. I heard you reading the review, and then there was nothing.
It was just technology.
So. It's one of those days.
I'm just happy it all works. So
it is pretty amazing if you think about all the things that we have and what they do. You're sitting on the subway and all of a sudden your phone buzzes, you look and there's a video of somebody in Sweden doing something or whatever, and like you get to experience it at the same time. I mean, that's unheard of 20 years ago.
Yeah. So speaking of 20 years ago, I have single pane windows in my house upstate. They are from 1949, and they have what are called triple track storm windows over the top of them on the outside. And for a while, I've been thinking about putting new triple track windows on the outside, new storm windows, because on this old house, the website, they said that would do a lot to help insulate the window. And then I realized the other day that the window manufacturers make a slide-in wood double-paned replacement window for your house. I mean, it depends on the size. You know, if you have an oddball size, they might not make it. But I was considering getting slide-in replacement windows instead of just putting the triple tracks on the outside, And you can slide them in from the inside of your home. You don't have to be up on a ladder dropping them in. The only thing that really, the caveats there is that the window frame has to be square and the sill, the window sill, can't be rotting. So you might have to do some work to reinforce the sill. But you could slide these puppies in, caulk it up or spray foam it up with your window frames spray foam, put the trim back over it, and it's like golden.
Now, your storm window stays on the outside, and this is basically from that point inward. Is that correct? Is that how you're describing it?
Right. I would remove the triple tracks because it's a double glazed thermopane insulated window that I would be replacing it with. So you would actually be improving it quite a bit. You'd be making it a lot better. Is that a phrase?
And these are all just wood, because I've seen similar slide-ins that were vinyl and they were white and there was really one option. Now you can stain it, you could paint it, you could do anything basically. Because I know they have vinyl versions of these, but they have wood ones now also?
Yeah, they have wood ones. I saw them on the Lowe's site and also on one of the window company's sites. Anderson Windows has them and Pella has them. So if anyone has any experience with that, I would love to hear from you. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. All right.
I always find it interesting how much difference new windows make in a home, even for just looking out the window and the amount of glass versus wood. Like windows nowadays that you tend to buy have a smaller framer on the outside of it. So you actually get more glass area. And by just changing out a window, the amount of light that you get and the way it looks, and then the fact that you don't have the drafts and your R value goes up and all the other, you know, benefits of it. It's amazing what new windows will do inside of a house.
I just put out a video about insulating the back door of our Brooklyn apartment and just a little bit of spray foam, just pulling off the trim and doing a little spray foam and caulking, how I've made the kitchen a lot warmer just by stopping up some simple air gaps with spray foam. And it took maybe an hour. I mean, it took longer because I shot a video about it, but pretty straightforward there. One fella was like, well, why don't you replace the door with an insulated slab door? And I'm like, because I like sunlight, you know?
Yeah, and if you get one with glass in it, sometimes you have to buy that custom, and then it takes twice as long, and it's usually three times the price. You know, that's the one challenge about glass and indoors and stuff, is you end up spending way more than you need to. I mean, doors that have glass are probably twice as expensive as a window with glass.
Yeah, we'll eventually replace this door with a double glazed thermopane. It's called a French door. You know, it has French. They're called French lights. I don't know. It's the door with a bunch of little rectangular pieces of glass in it. But it's actually an interior door that has been used as an exterior door. And the building we're in was a rental building for years. So they would just do whatever was cheap. So
I will say I am happy to see that when you talked about spray foam, you covered the two big issues with spray foam. Item number one, which is using the right foam, not getting like the super expansive stuff that causes high pressure in windows and doors, because that's a huge issue to cause your windows and doors to stick. And then the second one is to wear bad clothes or clothes that can get dirty, because I'll be honest, I've made that mistake. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to get the spray foam out and do this little bit, and then it ends up on your shirt and it will never come out. I have a shirt right now that still has spray foam in it from probably 4 years ago.
Yep.
You know,
I've just ruined a lot of clothing in, you know, with
that. Yeah, same thing.
Because I love spray foam. I'm like, oh, I'll just go do this. And then all of a sudden it's on your sleeve and you're like, well, there goes that shirt.
So here's a spray foam hack, and I don't know if it'll translate on the radio, but I'll give it my best shot. So you know how you have the tube and you put the plastic hose on the end of it and you run the can?
Right.
If there's times where you're working at an angle where you can't get up into the area that you need, if you go to like a pet store or fish store, or even actually a hardware store would have it, but the clear plastic tubing that they have, you know, that's really bendable, that they use for like air hoses for like your fish tank and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Cut a length of that, let's say a foot or two long, and slide it at least 4 or 5 inches down onto that plastic tube. But now you've just extended and you've made that tube flexible, so you can slide it up into spaces and get back into areas that you can't necessarily reach with the straight stick, and then run it and it'll still run the same way. Afterwards, you have to throw it out because you can't really clean it out. But it's an easy way to deliver foam back into really tight areas that you can't get to normally.
Oh, yeah, because I'm like up at the top – if you're trying to do like the sill plate of your house or something, you're in the basement, the can hits the joist or it hits the subfloor and you're trying to foam and I'm like bending the straw down and it,
yep.
Then the can isn't exactly, like 90 degrees straight up and the air starts to get in there and brilliant.
This way you can add, I mean, I've gone as far as adding 2 feet on the end of it. Now it's not recommended to go that far, but if you slide it onto the plastic 6 inches, which that is a most important part is you need to slide that sleeve over the top by at least 4 inches to 6 inches. The reason why is if you only put it on a little bit, the pressure is enough to pop it off and then it sprays all over your walls and furniture. I have done that. But if you slide it down at least 4 to 6 inches, you could probably add 18 inches onto the end of that. And it's super flexible. So you can just slide that right up inside a block. That's how I actually prepped the spray foam in the basement of the cabin project was I couldn't get the can upright. So now you hold it down, a foot down from the ceiling in your hand at a comfortable level. And then you're just reaching up with the hose and spraying in there.
Boom. So in even more of a tangent where we talk about insulation in homes is you have one of these laser temperature gizmos.
Yeah, I was waiting. Like I saw you doing the video about, finding leaky air spots and stuff. And I was waiting for you to pull out a laser thermal temperature piece. And, they're fairly inexpensive, but you can find the temperature of anything. And they work great.
I have one. It was just in the wrong house.
Yeah, I get that. Totally. But it's really cool because you can go around your house and shoot your windows or doors or down along the end trim pieces or to figure out if, you've got an air gap that you can't reach to or something like that. You can just sneak in there and you can kind of look at the temperature. And then when you go and do your fix, go back and check it again and you will see a significant difference between the two.
So at night you like go outside and laser your house?
You can actually, it actually works better to do it at night than during the day. Like on a cold night when it's dark outside, you can, laser your house and find out where your biggest air gaps are or leaks or things like that. Like, oh, hey, that vent around there up on the top or that spot by the soffit has, there's a leak. Well, the easiest way to find it is you don't want the sun beating down on it because it'll show it as warm versus at night when there's no sun outside, your house kind of stays an even temperature. And that's when you're easy to figure out the temperature differences between everything.
All right. I just have this visual of you out at night lasering your house and the neighbors looking out the window going, what's wrong with that guy?
I would recommend not wearing a ski mask and a black outfit because that is a one-way ticket to having the cops called. Not saying it's happened, but maybe it could have. What did we have to eat or drink before this? Because we've been on a roll on the humor today.
Yeah. I had decaf coffee.
I haven't had any coffee today at all. Actually, I'm not allowed to have coffee because otherwise you couldn't listen to this at 2X.
You talk too fast.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a fun viewer mail here. It's from Daniel. He says, hey, Eric, I love your radio show and I watch your YouTube videos in batches when I head over to YouTube on occasion. That's actually how a lot of people watch the show. If you haven't heard of the show, I'd recommend taking a watch of it. It's Alive with Brad and it's on the Bon Appetit YouTube channel. It's about fermented foods and other things that are alive, like oysters. I find it very entertaining and watch it about as regularly as I watch Garden Fork. Keep up their great work. And thanks again, Daniel. So I went over to the Bon Appetit YouTube channel and there's the Alive with Brad is actually a occasional piece that they do on the Bon Appetit YouTube channel, but it seems to be the most popular. And he's like a Garden Fork bro dude who I think is like the kitchen manager at Bon Appetit, which is in the World Trade Center, which is like, pretty ooh-la-la kitchen. But he's like a real down-to-earth guy, and he's making kombucha and beer and fermented stuff like that. So it was kind of fun to watch. He was making kombucha, and, he's got 500,000 views on this one video, and I'm like, what am I doing wrong,
Yeah, I scratch my head some days on some of that stuff and go, what's the difference? Like you look at one person made pot roast and somebody else made pot roast. And it's like, why does this one have 500,000 views? And this one has, 5,000 views. Like what made the one look different than the other? But it's good information either way. My question about his kitchen is, does he have a flamethrower and has he used it?
They've got those dinky little ones. Those little, it's about 6 inches long and has a little silver top and it goes, barely goes on. And so they can make their lemon meringue pie or something like that.
Somebody got me one of those at one point in time for, you could use that to light pyro. And I used it for about one day outside and I ended up wrecking it and went back to the big blowtorch.
Do you just use like a map gas propane torch?
It depends on what I'm doing. Like if I'm doing something private at the house and it's for the family and I'm just doing some little sparkler things or things like that, yeah, I'll use that. If we're shooting professionally, of course, everything's electronic. So right. You just push a button and boop, off it goes instantaneously. It's amazing how fast it goes too. Like you look at the button and you just push down and it's already in the air. It's amazing.
What fun. Well, that was cool of Daniel to say that. So it's called Alive with Brad and it's at the Bon Appetit YouTube channel. I'll link to it there in the show notes. So
neat.
Cool. Have you been over to the Garden Fork Amazon shop lately?
I have actually. That's where I looked to see if you had the laser thermometer on there to say, hey, you should put one of these in there, but you already had one in there. So, and yours looked a lot nicer than the one I was looking at.
And we'll link to it in the show notes here, but it's amazon.com/shop/Garden Fork. But yeah, it's, and they go on sale. I think I got it when they had one of those super sales on. I actually got one that reads a higher temperature. The inexpensive ones will read up to, I think, 400 or 500 degrees. But with the pizza oven, the do-it-yourself portable fall-apart pizza oven, I wanted to see, you know, what are the temperatures? And of course, I thought they were 900 degrees and they're not, but I got the one that can go a slightly higher range. So if you're thinking about using it for like a bread oven or something, you might want to consider the higher range one.
On your pizza oven, do you ever use that in the winter or is that only kind of dig it out in the summer type?
I use it in the fall. It's usually too cold to build it in the winter. So, cause I have to get all the brick is behind the garage and the snow is back there. And
I was just curious if you ever had problems with any of the bricks, spalding or anything like that, or bursting and kind of crumbling because of that heat or whatever.
Oh, I don't know. But what Will's referring to is if there's some moisture in your brick and then you heat it up, that moisture can turn to steam and crack the brick. But no, I haven't had that issue. I keep all the brick on a pallet and then I put another pallet on top of that and I put a Harbor Freight outdoor, one of those silvery outdoor tarps over it. So gotcha. I try and keep the snow and rain off them in general. And then it was funny, somebody left a comment on one of the brick oven videos the other day. And it's like, well, you know, why don't you cement these so they'll stay together? And I'm like, the whole idea is you can take it back apart, you know?
Exactly. The thing I was thinking about in the wintertime is would it hold temperature because of the, you know, it's cold outside? Or the other issue is would you have an issue with it being cold on the bricks on one side and hot on the other?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe you should build one and we'll see, Will.
There you heard it, honey. My wife is listening right now. Eric said I should build a brick oven. I'm getting leered at right now. She's just staring at me.
All right. Well, it's time to go then. Well, thanks, everyone. If you want to consider leaving us a review, you can go to iTunes or use your phone and write a little review right on the podcast app. That would be great. And always radio@gardenfork.tv. If you know anything about replacement windows, I'd love to hear from you. And then be sure to check out Will's YouTube channel, The Weekend Homestead. Anything else?
I think that's it. If I don't talk to you before the weekend, have a good weekend, buddy.
All right, you as well, my friend. Thank you, everybody. Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.